I will close my eyes, then 3, 2, 1. The guilty hide, the guilty run. I'll make you fly till the day I'm done. You're a marked man, brother, you're a marked man.
Chapter 7. No Rest for the Wicked.
If you search your soul and it sets you free, you're all contrite like you ought to be. It might get you off, get you right with God, but you'll never be right with me.
Padme recognized the emotions chasing their way across Amidala's face, because they were probably identical to her own. Anger, fear, resignation, vindication, and a flash of pained memory. All of them there and gone again in a matter of seconds, before Amidala rose from her seat with a rustle of fabric and stepped towards the comm panel. "This is the Queen," she said. "Give me a status report, officer."
"Captain Haradau, Your Majesty. The Federation fleet is at present 31 light minutes from Naboo on an intercept course to the planet. If they continue at their current speed, they'll engage the home fleet in 75 minutes. They'll be in range of fixed and orbital defenses on Storm in 16 minutes.
"I understand," Amidala said. "Are they broadcasting Republic military ID?
"No, Your Majesty."
"How many ships? Has the home fleet been notified?"
"Yes, Your Majesty. Our sensors show 5 dreadnoughts, 4 star frigates, 9 heavy cruisers, 18 destroyers, and 18 light cruisers. No landing craft launched yet."
Padme winced at the number, but Anakin and Obi-Wan glanced at each other, their gazes experienced and calculating. She tried to remember the size of the home fleet they had seen in orbit when they'd arrived, wondering if it was a match for the Trade Federation ships. Neither Amidala nor the 2 Jedi seemed particularly worried. The comm panel chimed again. Amidala said, "Excuse me, Captain," and tapped a control.
"Your Majesty, Admiral Agathon, commander of the home fleet."
"I've just been informed about our unexpected visitors, Admiral," Amidala said. "Any Trade Federation presence in this system is assumed to be hostile."
"Yes, Your Majesty. I'd come to that conclusion myself,"
the Admiral said dryly. A faint smile touched Amidala's lips. "If you haven't already done so, observe the formalities. Inform them that they've entered Sovereign Confederacy of Independent Systems space, and that the Trade Federation has no legal right to enter the system. You are authorized to use lethal force if they do not immediately comply and leave the system. Blow them out of the sky, Admiral."
"With pleasure, Your Majesty."
There was a touch of viciousness to the words, echoed in Amidala's slight smile as she ended the call. Padme shivered at the expression on the Queen's face as she tapped another frequency into the comm panel. "This is the Queen. I'll be in the war room in 20 minutes. Alert the Royal Advisory Council, but there's no need to call an emergency session yet. I'll make a public statement after I've assessed the situation. Inform the Gungan Alliance and Lunar Governors of the threat, and take the planet to threat level 3. Move ground forces and planetary defenses to full alert." She cut the connection and stepped back, her gaze on Padme, the 2 Jedi, and Captain Rex. Her expression was calculating, but then she said abruptly, "Yertai, Motie, escort Master Kenobi, Master Skywalker, and Captain Rex down to the war room. Padme, if you'll accompany me." Anakin started to stand up, ignoring Padme's restraining hand on his arm. "Where are you taking her?" "To my dressing room," Amidala said, with exaggerated patience. In the unlikely event that the Trade Federation succeeds in landing ground forces on this planet, Senator Amidala will be the safest with the rest of my handmaidens. We'll be down in the war room shortly. You'll all be there, because you should see what the Trade Federation does. Padme nodded slowly, wondering if Amidala had also realized that Obi-Wan and Anakin were probably the most experienced military personnel on the planet right now. She's right. Obi-Wan hadn't made her move to rise, but he regarded her with concern. Are you sure? Padme stood up, aware of the gazes of Amidala's handmaidens tracking the movement. I'm sure. It's what I would do. There was no protest that Anakin or Obi-Wan could raise to that. Padme followed Amidala out of the solar, aware of Sabe and Dorne behind her, and knowing that they probably had their hands on their blasters in case she made a move against the Queen. At some point, she must have summoned her other handmaidens, because Tekla and Rabe were waiting when they arrived in the dressing room. Amidala threw herself down in a chair, her hands tapping with impatience in her lap, as Tekla swooped in with pots of makeup. Dorne broke off from behind Padme to help Rabe fix Amidala's hair, while Sabe said, "This way," and led her back towards one of the open closets. "Padme, tell me about your universe," Amidala said, to Tekla's reproving tut as she apparently did something to smear her makeup. "Start with the invasion." Padme took a breath, ordered her thoughts as she stripped out of her clothes, just barely remembering to grab the Ouroboros and her holdout blaster as she began to talk. She was aware of the other handmaidens listening, occasionally asking questions, but no one stopped what they were doing. It was all disturbingly familiar, right down to the approaching Trade Federation fleet. She wondered if Amidala and the handmaidens who had been here then felt the same way. Hastily roused from sleep, most of the handmaidens were in half-robes, the clothes they were accustomed to wearing under their concealing cloaks or outer robes. Tonight, they were in dark gray leggings and blouses, beneath long, dark red sleeveless tunics, their blasters holstered on their hips. Sabe found the clothes in Amidala's closet and handed them to her, then passed on the matching calf-length coat and knee-high synth leather boots. Padme dressed quickly, strapping on the ELG-3A blaster pistol and holster that Sabe handed over at Amidala's command. Sabe's gaze flicked to the chrono. "Here," she said, pushing Padme down into a seat. Padme's hair had been wrapped in a crown of braids around her head, but Sabe pulled them loose and unraveled them in record time, pulling them into the same six-stranded braid as the other handmaidens. Amidala was done, too. She straightened up from her seat, smoothing her hands down across the fabric of her skirts and studying herself in the mirror. She had kept the same red and gold gown, but her face was now painted white, the scar of remembrance red at the center of her lower lip. There were usually minor differences between monarchs on the rest of the face paint, but for some reason, Padme had been expecting Amidala to use the simplest form, as she herself had. Instead of the two round beauty marks on either cheek, however, she had red lines tracing over the center of each eye, culminating in golden tears where the beauty marks should have been. The symbolism was for mourning, but in that case, the color should have been blue, not red, and Padme had never seen the tears before. Rabe and Dorne had reordered her hair, fixing half the braids up into loops on either side of her face, and leaving the rest loose at the back of her head. Topping it was a gold headpiece with two large engraved rounds in front of her ears, each set with a massive red gem, and a foil of delicate chains ending in coins framing her painted face just behind the braids. She hadn't changed her gown, which Padme knew was an everyday gown rather than one meant for formal occasions, but it was elaborate enough that few people would realize that. The rest of the handmaidens were donning the remainder of their outfits. Amidala's gaze swept up and down Padme as she turned away from the mirror. Then she gave a quick nod of approval. "Does this happen often?" Padme asked dryly, falling in with the other handmaidens as they moved towards the door. She'd gotten up to the beginning of the war on Geonosis before Amidala had cut her off. This isn't the first time Federation forces have tried to launch an assault on the planet since their occupation ended, Amidala said. It will, however, be the last time. Obi-Wan hadn't been in the war room of the Theed Royal Palace in 13 years, but it looked little different than it had been when he had been here last, helping Padme and the rest of the Naboo mop up the remainder of the Trade Federation occupation, and trying to keep Anakin out of trouble. The latter had proven more difficult than the former. The military officers already in the war room looked at them with curiosity, but didn't ask who they were. Presumably, the accompaniment of the handmaidens proved that they were here with the Queen's permission. Obi-Wan paced slowly around the room, watching the holo displays and tactical stations with an experienced eye. Although most of them were focused on the Naboo system and its defenses, there were several displays that showed various sectors of the galaxy. Symbols marked the last known positions of Confederate and Republic forces, though Obi-Wan noted with thin-lipped detachment that most of the Republic forces were on loan from one or another of the Commerce Guilds. Naboo wasn't the only system tied up with the fighting. The Confederate system of Bothwai was under siege by a mixed Republic fleet, while fighting had already broken out on dock between the Confederate Mon Calamari and the Republic Quarren, as well as in some of the other newly added systems. Various colony worlds he vaguely recognized in the Outer and Mid-Rims had troops on them as well, and splashes of red in backwater systems showed clashes between warship flotillas, though none of the size of the Federation one that had just arrived on Naboo. He rejoined Anakin and Rex at a holographic display table, which was currently projecting a live view of the star system, with only a few seconds of delay because of the distances involved. Both the Federation and Naboo fleets were marked out, the Naboo in gold and the Federation in red, with the fixed and orbital defenses highlighted. "They aren't screwing around, General," Rex observed. "I didn't spot half of these on our way in." Anakin nodded, his arms crossed over his chest. "Are you thinking what I'm thinking?" he asked Obi-Wan. "Possibly," Obi-Wan said, stroking his beard. "The Federation jumped into the system very far out. They could have jumped in much closer and engaged the home fleet immediately." "That's what I thought, too," Anakin said. "Now the Naboo know they're coming. That Federation fleet is going to take a real beating from those fixed defenses if they don't wipe them out first. If I was the commander, I'd dispatch a few of those light cruisers and destroyers to take care of them right about now." Right on cue, two of the markers indicating light cruiser divisions split off from the main body of the Federation fleet. There was a burst of chatter from the Naboo military officers behind them, apparently watching the same thing on one of the other displays. Obi-Wan nodded to himself, knowing that they wouldn't find out whether or not the Federation cruisers had succeeded in destroying the fixed and orbital defenses on the system's uninhabitable planets and moons for several minutes yet, when they came in range of the gun emplacements on Storm, the fifth planet from the star. "You're right," he said, watching the slow approach of the Federation fleet. The majority of the home fleet had divided into six subdivisions, two of which had the Battlestar's Constellation and Reprisal at their centers, and was beginning to move on an intercept course with the Federation fleet. The third Battlestar, which the holodisplay had labeled Indefatigable, remained near the planet with the remainder of the home fleet ships, mostly light cruisers and destroyers as escort, along with three larger battlecruisers. "I know," Anakin said. "About what?" "You should have asked that first, then congratulated yourself," Obi-Wan observed. "Captain, if you saw a ground force rushing forward to engage your own troops, doing so in such a manner as to be visible a long ways off, what would you think?"
"It's a trap," Rex said immediately. "Or a diversion.
The enemy wants most of our forces tied up somewhere else, so they can do something sneaky." "Like when we went after Grievous at Seleucami," Anakin said. Or like Amidala and the Gungans did here 13 years ago.
I've got a bad feeling about this one, Obi-Wan. I get the feeling that the Queen wants to go in guns blazing and wipe the Federation off the map.
Just a feeling, Obi-Wan said dryly.
Anakin shrugged, lowering his voice.
Okay, so she did say it. Did you sense how angry she was, Obi-Wan? Like she wanted to rip Nute Gunray's head off with her bare hands. She wasn't shy about letting us see it, either. Not that I blame her, but I've never seen Padme that angry about anything.
Padme and Queen Amidala are not the same person, Obi-Wan reminded him.
Anakin rested his hands on the edge of the holodisplay table, looking down at its surface as the two fleets crawled towards each other, moving over the vast distances of a star system at sublight speed.
Yeah, he said. I think that's pretty clear. Padme's not that brutal.
Brutal isn't exactly the word I would use, Obi-Wan said. We don't have any evidence of that yet.
Except for the fact that she executed two Jedi, Anakin said.
Somehow, Obi-Wan had managed to forget about that, distracted by the feverish light of fanaticism in the Queen's eyes. Amidala was too good a politician to show her emotions accidentally, so she must have done so deliberately, knowing that if she managed to convince them, then she would have...
What? What did they have to offer her?
It seemed vanishingly unlikely that Amidala would trust any Jedi, even two that presumably had no prior loyalties within this universe.
Padme had no power here.
Except in what she represents, the road not taken. No matter how deeply Amidala believes in the Confederacy, the decision she made to leave the Republic must weigh heavily on her. And if she's telling the truth and she turned down Senate aid after the occupation because it came with too many strings, she must wonder about that. Especially if people died because of it. If she can convince Padme that she made the right decision, then maybe she can rest easy.
Could it be as simple as that?
He was sure that Amidala didn't think of it that way.
Anakin, staring at the holodisplay, broke into his thoughts by saying,
There go the fixed defenses on the storm moons. Look like they got four of those those Federation cruisers first. The storm orbital defense platform's still shooting, though. The second detached cruiser division is going to be in range of the fixed and orbital defenses on Widow in about 7 minutes.
Rex was watching the display with a frown.
General, I'm just a dirt eater, which is what the clone crews and marine of the Republic starships called regular Gar soldiers. But extraplanetary fixed defenses like that aren't usual for systems like this, are they? I've never heard chatter about them in the fleet.
Obi-Wan dragged his scattered thoughts back together.
No, they aren't. Very few systems have extraplanetary fixed or orbital defenses, because up until the war began, there was no need for them. The biggest threat was pirates, not being invaded by a neighboring system, and fixed defenses would have just been looted. I don't believe they're crewed most of the time.
One of Amidala's handmaidens, Irte, the blonde one, said diffidently,
They aren't, Master Jedi. They fire an automatic if anything strays into their engagement envelope, but planetary defense can also fire manually by remote. The orbital defense platforms usually have crews of 3 to 5 personnel.
All three of them turned around to stare at her. She shrugged, her cheeks a little red from the sudden attention.
Thank you, Anakin said, his voice slightly strangled from sheer surprise.
That's very helpful. We don't have defenses like that in the Republic. In our Republic. That I know about, anyway.
If we do, they're beyond my security clearance, Obi-Wan said, as Anakin slid a glance sideways at him.
As a member of the Jedi High Council, his security clearance was higher than Anakin's, though somehow, Anakin always knew interesting tidbits he'd learned from Chancellor Palpatine or Senator Amidala. Rex was looking at Irte, impressed and radiating interest in the Force. She smiled slowly at him, her expression a little uncertain.
"There goes the orbital defense platform," Anakin said, his gaze drawn back to the holodisplay. That Federation fleet's past storm now.
After a moment, Obi-Wan found the controls on the holodisplay table to detail the current velocities and vectors of the two fleets.
"If these stay the same, then they'll make hard contact in..."
He paused to do the math in his head.
32 minutes.
Anakin shook his head.
"Why did they jump in so far out? It's stupid! Naboo can see them coming, and they're going to get chewed up by the fixed defenses even before they engage the home fleet. If they were going to try and run the home fleet blockade, they would have jumped in closer. What in blazes aren't we seeing?"
He put his hands on the edge of the table and leaned forward, as though hoping he could divine the Federation's plans merely by staring at the display.
"We're not seeing anything because it's not here yet," Rex said suddenly. The Republic knows that the Naboo hate the Trade Federation. The Queen said that most of the Republic forces in this universe are on loan from the Commerce Guilds. If a Federation fleet jumps into Naboo space, then the home fleet is going to head out to meet it, and the Republic could sneak in a landing force while planetary defense is focused on the Federation fleet. Like we did at Seleucumai.
Anakin swore viciously enough to get the attention of the officers on the other side of the war room. But the other handmaiden, Motie, shook her head and said, "There's no way to get past our defense grid. The Federation and the Republic have both tried, and security was tightened since the last assassination attempt. The Republic couldn't get a drone on this planet without us knowing." With clinical disinterest, Rex said,
"They got 2 Jedi Knights down not too long ago."
Mortier's mouth tightened, but she was saved from answering by the arrival of Queen Amidala and the rest of her handmaidens, along with Padme. She was in full face paint now, which did nothing to aid Obi-Wan's faint sense of dislocation, as if he had somehow come unstuck in space and time.
"Space, yes. Time, not yet." That was Anakin.
Some of his dismay must have reverberated in the Force, because Anakin gave him a worried look. Padme delicately separated herself from the rest of the handmaidens and came over to stand on Obi-Wan's other side, watching the holodisplay.
"You look pretty," Anakin told her.
She gave him a look that suggested now was really not the time for compliments. Obi-Wan pushed away from the table, moving to intercept the Queen as she made her way up towards the officers.
"Your Majesty, you may have a problem."
Amidala turned towards him, the golden chains in her headpiece jangling softly. Beneath her elaborate face paint, her expression was concerned.
"What kind of problem?"
No sooner had she spoken than a sound like 1,000 thunderclaps compressed into one boomed across the city. The entire palace shook. Half of the tactical displays in the war room shattered, while the other half nearly did, cracks splintering across their surfaces. The lights and holographic displays in the room blinked out, emergency lighting sluggishly kicking in several minutes later. Anakin had turned to shelter Padme from the broken glass, automatically stretching his senses out through the Force. Doing so dragged at the raw places inside his head, but by now they were metaphorically scabbed over, and he didn't feel the strain that meant he'd injured himself again.
"What was that?" Amidala demanded.
"That," Obi-Wan said, his face pale in the gloom of the emergency lumas,
was a warship jumping out of hyperspace close enough to the planet to make an atmospheric entry. My guess is that it crashed not far from the palace. Amidala's face went completely blank. So many emotions overwhelming her force presence that Anakin couldn't focus on any of them. "Get the power back up," she snapped. "I need eyes on the surface, and I need them now." If they jumped in that close to the mass shadow, they should have been... Anakin dragged his mind away from the physics as alarms blared through the palace, echoed in the distance beyond the walls. Every Naboo in the war room except Padme froze in an instant, before an officer hit a button and the sound cut off, though Anakin could still hear it elsewhere. "What is that?" "It's an air raid siren," said Irte, her voice remarkably calm. "We used them during the occupation when the Federation bombed the city." Without another word, Amidala picked up her skirts and ran towards the door, her handmaidens trailing after her. Anakin hesitated for an instant, then followed, Obi-Wan and Padme on his heels. The war room was deep within the palace, protected by layers of walls and shielding from aerial bombardment. Amidala ran up wide staircases and through empty corridors, eventually coming out in a wide, deserted room with a window that looked out over Palace Plaza. She stopped in front of it, breathing hard as she stared out the paned glass. The crashed warship wasn't visible from the window, which meant that it probably hadn't made landfall somewhere in the city itself. But of more immediate concern were the hyena-class droid bombers and their vulture-class droid starfighter escorts swooping down through the clouds. The other Federation ships must have jumped in between the remaining home fleet ships and the planet, close enough to launch their fighters and bombers without being shut down by the Naboo. The air raid sirens were screaming their warning across the city. Anti-aircraft batteries lit up the sky, the darkened city already illuminated as bombs splashed down, sending up gouts of flame in their wake. A handful of Naboo starfighters had made it off the ground already and were attempting to harry the droid fighters, their yellow and chrome bodies gleaming sleekly in the light from the flames. As they watched, one of the battery towers exploded as a proton torpedo struck it, and a burst of laser fire sent an N1 starfighter spiraling into the dome of the Theed Royal Library, flames spiraling up where it had crashed. "Why aren't the city's shields up?" Padme asked in a small voice. "They've been disrupted by the shockwave from the warship's entry," Obi-Wan said. "They'll probably reset in 5 minutes," Amidala said bleakly. 5 minutes until the shield generators can reset. Same for communications and sensors. Probably. If we're lucky." She stared out the window, her hands clenching and unclenching in fists. "We were right," Anakin thought. And then, before he even had a chance to think about it, he said, "Put us in the air." Amidala turned towards him, her golden headpiece catching the light of the burning city behind her. "What?" "Obi-Wan and I are the best combat pilots in the Order," Anakin said. "We've been flying against hyenas and vultures for years now. We know how they fly, and we know where they're vulnerable. Put us in the air. We can buy you the time to get your shields back up." Some of the blankness in Amidala's eyes faded. "Why would you do that?" she asked. "Your Republic, your Jedi."
"Yes, we are," Obi-Wan said. "And as Jedi, we protect the innocent. We aren't friends of the Trade Federation."
"Far from it," Anakin said. "We've been fighting them for 3 years now. Put us in the air, Your Majesty. We're the best chance you have."
Amidala stared at them, then her gaze went to Padme.
"Are they?"
Padme nodded.
"They're the best," she said, without hesitation.
"If anyone can do it, they can."
"Do it,"
she said, and added,
Master Kenobi. Obi-Wan's call sign is Gold Leader. When the rest of the on-call pilots get to their fighters and comms are reestablished, they'll want to know you're in the air.
Obi-Wan blinked, realized what she meant, and said,
Yes, Your Majesty.
Motier will take you to the palace hangar, Amidala said, her attention already back on the carnage in the city.
Adrenaline was already coursing through Anakin. He felt like he was ready to vibrate out of his skin, waiting for combat and the rush that came from atmospheric flying. He started to follow Motier, then Padme caught him by the arm and said,
Ani, wait, and pulled him down into a kiss.
It was hard and fast and messy, and when Padme stepped back, all Anakin could do was stare at her in surprise, because they almost never touched in public.
There was heat in her cheeks. Then she turned to kiss Obi-Wan, too, her fingers pale against his hair.
Come back, she said, to both of them.
Obi-Wan looked too startled to respond. Anakin dragged his scattered thoughts together and said,
Rex, you don't leave her side, okay? Stay with Padme and the Queen.
Rex saluted.
Yes, sir.
Go now, Padme said, urgency in her voice. And they turned and ran.
Padme's lips were stinging from the kisses. Amidala was staring out the window, her small hands shaking slightly against the scarlet fabric of her skirts.
They're not trying to hit the palace.
Your Highness? Sabe said.
Our shields aren't up. They could turn this palace into rubble. But they're deliberately avoiding the palace. Why are they doing that?
Carefully, Padme stepped up beside her, resisting the urge to look away from the bombs raining down on Theed. She couldn't resist her wince as a pair of vulture droids buzzed Palace Plaza, blaster fire ringing out as the royal guard stationed in front of the Queen's Hall fired at them. One of the vultures went down, crashing into a monument to an ancient queen of the Naboo, and Padme flinched.
Amidala didn't.
They want me to watch, she said, answering her own question.
They want me to watch my city burn.
Her hands closed into fists, and she turned away in a whirl of blood-colored silk, striding back down the corridor towards the war room. Almost on cue, the lights in the palace began coming back on, her comlink beeping frantically until Amidala answered it.
Comms and sensors are back online. Shields should be up in 2 minutes,
said a harried-sounding military officer.
Indefatigable reports that her battle group has engaged the 2nd Federation flotilla.
How many ships? Amidala demanded.
3 dreadnoughts, 2 battleships, 12 heavy cruisers, and 9 destroyers, Your Majesty. Battleships are launching droid fighters, bombers, and landing craft.
Amidala swore. How long until the rest of our fighters are in the air?
Preliminary reports are coming in from RNSFC headquarters indicate that 5-6 fighters are away. Bombs took out part of the barracks, emergency crews are on site. 10 fighters in the air.
Warn them that Obi-Wan and another combat pilot are launching from the palace hangar, Amidala said. Captain Kenobi and...
General Skywalker, Padme supplied.
Captain Skywalker are in command.
Yes, Your Majesty.
I'll be there momentarily. Amidala cut the connection, increasing her pace.
Irte, I need you to start mocking up a speech. I'll need to make a public statement as soon as possible. Were they telling the truth?
This last was directed at Padme, who blinked and said,
Yes, Anakin and Obi-Wan were the best pilots and the best duelists in the Order. They wouldn't still be alive if they weren't.
They'd better be, Amidala said, picking up her skirts as she hurried down the stairs toward the war room. The moment the door slid open, she barked, Get me a direct line to the Federation flagship.
Yes, Your Highness, said one of the communications specialists, a Twi'lek woman who was elbow-deep in a console that was throwing out sparks. She pulled out, grabbed another specialist and shoved him at it, and hurried towards a different console.
One of the holo display tables was showing a projection of the city and the surrounding area. Padme went to it immediately, dry-mouthed, as she looked at the damage that satellites and surface sensors were picking up. The crashed warship was in the plain west of the city, several kilometers from the spaceport. At the moment, the sensors had labeled it non-aggressive. The Federation vultures, hyenas, and a handful of landing craft were picked out in red, the Naboo starfighters in green, more launching from the RNSFC hangar every minute. Most of them were moving too quickly for the sensors to pick up, blinking on and off the board as they slowed down momentarily.
"Is there a way that we can listen in on the frequency the fighter pilots use?"
she asked no one in particular.
"Here," said Dorme, tapping a control on the table.
"Bandit on your tail, Red 3. Eat this, Clanker scum!" "I can't shake him. I can't shake him, I..."
Padme and Dorme both flinched as the pilot's voice cut off in a burst of static.
"Ellie!"
someone screamed. Anakin's voice cut across it.
"Cut the chatter, Red Squadron. Form up on me. We're going to take the Western Quadrant." "Gold Squadron, form up on me,"
Obi-Wan added, his voice calm and collected.
"We'll take the Eastern Quadrant. Gray Squadron, the North. Blue Squadron, you are to remain in this quadrant and keep those droids away from the palace until the shields are back up."
"He sounds like the real thing," Dorme murmured. "General Kenobi is the real thing," Rex told her, frowning.
"He isn't ours," she said.
It had been a long time since Anakin had flown an N1 starfighter, but he'd been able to fly just about anything even before he'd been formally trained to do just that. The N1 handled beautifully beneath him. Its aerodynamics were a little different from his other sprite, but a quick systems check and the constant updates from his astromech, a chirpy R7 unit, told him that its combat systems and shielding had been substantially improved since the last time he'd flown an N1, now easily the equal of a Jedi starfighter. The Naboo had seriously not been screwing around when they'd done refits.
"All right, Red Squadron, let's get these tinnies out of our sky," he said, angling the starfighter west.
"They're not doing much for the decor." From the air, the view was even more hellish than it had been from the palace. Sunrise was still a few hours away, so the fires burning across the city were clearly visible. Great gouts of flame rising from buildings that had already been struck by Federation bombs, fresh ones appearing every time a hyena dropped another bomb or a vulture blasted laser fire on the streets below. The civil defense towers, which the starfighter readouts told him were manned with gun batteries and three-person crews, were shooting back, but suffering heavily as the vultures retaliated.
"Red 2, Red 4, let's give him a hand," he said.
"With pleasure, Red Leader,"
said Red 2, a calm-sounding woman with a strong Southern Isles accent. Anakin's sensor boards lit up as laser fire streaked across the sky, crippling one vulture so that it careened sideways into the second. They exploded in a burst of flame and tangled metal, raining down on the park area that surrounded the battery tower.
"How long until city shields are restored?"
Obi-Wan asked on one of the command frequencies, the question relayed back to the war room and planetary defense headquarters. Anakin realized that he had no idea where the ladder was.
2 minutes.
"You said that 5 minutes ago," Anakin protested, his targeting computer picking out a hyena droid dead ahead of him. "Now? Just dead."
"We're doing everything we can."
"We'll do it faster!"
He didn't recognize the voice, but it was female, and definitely pissed off. More reports were coming in, as Anakin brought his fighter around to lure a quartet of vultures escorting a hyena into a crossfire laid down by the rest of his squadron.
"Shipyards on Rory are taking heavy fire from orbit. We've got reports of hyena bombers targeting the Feed Central spaceport. Armed civilian vessels in the air are shooting back from ground level. They just took out our fixed defenses on Widow. Lunar defenses on Omadun report Fed bombers targeting the orbital space docks. Starfighters launching from the base on Omadun."
If Anakin hadn't been a Jedi Knight, with years of combat experience at a command level, the constant input of information would have been overwhelming. As it was, he instantly accepted and compartmentalized the updates, tracking what was and wasn't useful. Republic engagements were generally less chatty, but at that point he usually knew the ground, the forces available, and their capabilities. He didn't know that here. He might have been away from the war for a while, but it hadn't been long enough for him to lose the knack of fighting this kind of engagement. Red Squadron, form up in... Oh, dang! He had no idea if they trained in the same formations the Gar and the Jedi did. He ran on a quick mental list of the most common starfighter formations, and said, Carol and Alpha, on me. He kept an eye on his sensor boards, relieved to find the remainder of the squad falling in around him. They swept in on the remaining Vulture and Hyena droids, trading blaster fire with the Vultures and the Hyenas who had already dropped all their payloads.
Is it just me, or are they more interested in hitting civvies than us?
Red Six asked.
It's not just you,
Red Nine agreed. Stow the chatter and drop them before anyone else loses their home, Anakin ordered. The wreckage and flak from the dying droid fighters would do a lot of damage coming down over the city, but not as much as a direct hit.
Dang it, they just took out the maglev line,
came over the general frequency, making everyone curse.
We've got battle droids on the surface. Ground forces moving to intercept. Ah, fearfic! Frigate just took out Exemplar. Targeting the plasma refineries.
Someone else. A frantic-sounding engineer.
City shields will be operational in 30 seconds.
All right, Red Squadron, everyone, climb, climb. Let's not let those clankers get trapped under them. Anakin ordered, memories of urban defenses past at the forefront of his mind. He didn't know how high the Theed shields went, but he'd been in the war long enough to have a pretty good idea. He could hear Obi-Wan and the other squadron leaders echoing the order. They chased the Vultures and Hyenas higher and higher, fighters dropping out of formation to harry them back into place and away from the civilian targets. Anakin, glancing out the canopy, winced when he saw that part of the palace had been hit, flames rising high into the sky. Padme, be safe.
Shields going up in 3, 2, shields up!
Silver fire blossomed across the sky below Anakin, shooting up from the remaining shield generator towers. There were gaps, but his computers informed him that almost 60% of the city, including the palace, were now covered. Memories sparked at Anakin as he jinked sideways to avoid laser fire from a slow-moving hyena droid. Red 2 blasted it out of the sky before he had a chance to, passing close enough to him that he saw her jaunty wave before she zoomed off after another vulture. Padme and Queen Amidala had both talked about the city shields during the occupation. The Federation bombarded it. A few droid troops managed to get through. Chuta! He swore. What kind of shields are they? Ray shields or particle shields? One allowed solid objects to pass through. The other didn't. The answer came back quickly.
Layer deflector shields, Captain Skywalker. Naboo ships are targeted to pass, but the droids will be vaporized if they try.
Thanks. His sensors told him that about half a dozen fighters, most of Blue Squadron, and twice the number of Federation droid fighters had been trapped beneath the shields when they went up. Blue Leader, you got it all under control down there?
Like shooting fish in a barrel, Red Leader, but thanks for the offer.
On the command frequency.
The home fleet has engaged the Federation fleet. Constellation and Reprisal report all fighters are away. Civilian vessels have destroyed droid fighters targeting Theed Central Spaceport.
And then, an alarm blaring in the background.
A flotilla of Republic warships has just jumped out of hyperspace.
The small Republic flotilla jumped out of hyperspace and into chaos. The Jedi Task Force had rendezvoused with Plo Koon's Star Destroyer and its escort ships in a nearby uninhabited system, wanting the warships as backup in case it came to fighting between the Trade Federation fleet and the Jedi. Mace didn't think that Newt Gunray was actually that stupid, but he had learned a long time ago not to underestimate the Viceroy. Now, on the bridge of the Star Destroyer Resolute, he blinked in surprise as they flashed into rel space. He didn't need the Operations Watchstander's cry of "Multiple contacts on the sensor boards!" to see that the Resolute and her escort ships had just jumped into the middle of a battle, since that was clearly visible through the bridge viewport. Just in front of them, Trade Federation and Naboo warships were locked in deadly combat, streaks of deadly laser fire battering against glowing shields, N1 starfighters and vulture droids darting madly through the chaos of the capital ships and the smaller destroyers and cruisers. A smaller Naboo force was visible on the sensors, though not to the naked eye, as still in orbit around the planet, doubtless on guard against another Federation attack. "Sensors indicate that there's fighting down on the planet as well, sir," reported the Operations Watchstander. "Not much. What we can pick up from the Naboo satellite feeds indicate that it's centered on the city of Theed and the surrounding area. Looks like a Federation warship that jumped in too close to the planet and crashed."
"Attention, Galactic Republic warships,"
announced the automated proximity alert. At least Mace assumed it was automated, since he doubted that anyone in Planetary Defense HQ was in the mood to be that polite.
"You have entered Sovereign Confederacy of Independent Systems space. You have no legal right to enter this system. Hold your position and identify your purpose. If you continue to advance, you will be fired upon."
"Should we respond, sir?" asked the Communications Watchstander.
The Resolute's captain, Wolf Yularen, shook his head.
"The Naboo seem to be a bit too busy to concern themselves with us. Alert the Trade Federation flagship that they are ordered to immediately disengage and withdraw all troops from the planetary surface," Mace said.
There was a minute of silence, in which the two Federation light cruisers and a Naboo heavy destroyer exploded in bursts of blinding light, the resultant shockwave sending starfighters spinning out in all directions before the pilots regained control. Finally, the communications officer said,
"They're not acknowledging our calls, sir."
"Keep trying," Mace said, "and see if you can punch through to Naboo and inform them that we aren't here to engage the forces as well."
"Aye, aye, sir."
Mace turned to go, then stopped at Captain Yularen's gesture.
"You're set on this course," he asked.
"The Federation flagship will very likely be in the thick of the fighting. It will be very dangerous."
"Not as dangerous as leaving Newt Gunray to his own devices," Mace said. "These Federation types are cowards. Gunray will be as far back from the fighting as he can. Keep the flotilla from engaging the enemy unless you have no choice. If you can reach the Naboo, tell them that we're only here to escort the Federation back to Republic space. The Trade Federation is not acting as a representative of the Republic military in this attack."
"I understand," Yularen said. "Good hunting, Master Jedi."
"May the Force be with you," Mace said, and turned away, his cloakhem swirling behind him as he made his way to the shuttle dock where the other Jedi were waiting for him.
"Your Majesty, the Trade Federation warships aren't acknowledging our calls," said the communications specialist, scowling. Queen Amidala rested her hands on one of the holodisplay tables, leaning over it as she studied the projection of the Naboo system and the tangled knot of Naboo and Trade Federation warships, the newly arrived Republic flotilla hanging back just shy of the fighting.
"What about the Republic?"
"We're working on it, Your Majesty." Amidala made an absent, nervous gesture with one hand, red-painted nails fluttering for an instant before she gripped the holotable again, staring at the scene of the space battle as though she could affect the outcome from sheer will. Padme had been watching the holodisplay of Theed, But with the city shields now up, it was clear that the RNSFC had the situation well in hand. She could hear them on the pilot's frequencies, talking to each other and yelling at the droids, occasionally reined in by Anakin, Obi-Wan, or the other squadron leaders. A little regretfully, she turned away to make her way over toward the Queen, who blinked and looked up at her approach. "I hate this waiting," she said. "I'd rather be fighting. There's too much time to think in here." Her voice went soft. "It reminds me too much of the occupation, sitting in the palace and listening to the Federation bombard the city." Padme licked her lips. "That must have been terrible." "Yes." Amidala's gaze went distant, focusing on something only she could see. "You're lucky," she said at last, "that you never..." She stopped, swallowing. "I suppose I am," Padme said quietly. She had seen the aftermath of separatist bombardments on other worlds, but she had never lived through it. She had woken from nightmares more than once where the bombs had been falling on Naboo or Coruscant, dreaming that she was walking through the wreckage of Theed, or the Senate building, or the Jedi Temple, looking for something, someone, that she had lost. Amidala's grip was white-knuckled on the side of the holo display table. Sabe, on her other side, laid one hand over hers, leaning down to murmur something in Amidala's ear. The Queen nodded, her attention elsewhere, even though she was staring at the projection of the battle. "Goodness, Your Majesty! Shouldn't you be somewhere safe?" Padme went still, feeling Rex tense beside her. She knew that voice. She knew it far too well, and she would have been very happy to never hear it again. She put a hand out to stop Rex as he started to reach for his blasters, turning slowly to hide her dismay. The Queen had turned too, irritation showing briefly on her painted features. "Congressman Palpatine," she said, "shouldn't you be in emergency shelters?" The former Supreme Chancellor was swift-faced with fatherly concern, dressed hastily in a quilted dressing gown over his sleeping garments, which made him look as harmless as a Vorpak. His gaze flitted over Padme and Rex without recognition, settling on the Queen with all the avidness of a Tuskak going after its prey. Padme felt her fingers twitch slightly, wanting to reach either for her blaster or for the Ouroboros in its hidden pocket. Would it call to him? She wondered, even though Obi-Wan had assured her earlier that it only had a shadow of its former strength. Would he look at her in a moment and demand to know who she was and why she was carrying a Force artifact of terrible power, when she herself was no Force user? "If I cannot have Empire, I will have chaos," he whispered, dying in Padme's memories. "And we will burn together." Did he carry a lightsaber? Would he take it out in a moment and cut her down? Cut down the Queen? And did his gaze skate back towards her just for an instant, as though he had sensed something beyond ordinary human comprehension, but not out of reach for a Jedi or a Sith? "I was in the shelters," Palpatine told the Queen, coming forward. "But I saw that you weren't there. Your Majesty, in your delicate condition, surely..." Amidala gave him a chilling look. "Your concern is noted but unnecessary, my lord." "I'm sure Captain Kenobi wouldn't thank you for risking yourself like this, Your Majesty," Palpatine said. "Let planetary defense do their jobs. This is no place for you." It was the first time Padme had ever seen what she looked like while contemplating murder. "Congressman, my condition is none of your concern," Amidala snapped, as all five of the handmaidens in the room focused their glares on Palpatine. He seemed startled by the sudden attention, blinking at her as though he couldn't understand why she had taken his words so poorly.
"Your Majesty," called the communications specialist. "We're receiving a transmission from the Federation flagship, marked for your eyes only."
"Send it to the conference room," Amidala said, glancing away from Palpatine. She swept imperiously away from him, her handmaidens following. Just in time, Padme remembered to fall in with them, motioning Rex to stay where he was with a flick of her hand. He stood back by the hollow display table, watching her worriedly until the door to the conference room slid shut behind them. It was a room that would fit only a dozen people in the flesh, but far more via hologram. Amidala settled herself in the throne, the handmaidens on either side of her. Padme stood on the end, next to Irte, where her resemblance to Amidala would be less marked. The bridge of a Trade Federation warship blossomed on a virtual screen hanging in the air in front of them. At the corners of it, Padme could see Nemoidian crew and battle droids going about the business of running the ship, but her attention was caught by Newt Gunray, who was standing at the center of the image. He looked almost exactly as he had the last time she had seen him, right down to the smug expression on his gray-green face.
"Ah, Your Highness," he said. "It has been too long."
"Viceroy," Amidala returned. "Only you could be so bold. Have you come to surrender? I warn you, I will not be so generous this time. I am afraid that I have no more patience for the Trade Federation and its illegal military actions."
"Illegal?"
said Gunray, his familiar voice making Padme clench her fists so tightly that her nails dug into her palms.
"I'm afraid you're mistaken, Your Highness. We would never do anything without the permission of the Senate. The declaration of war
does not give the Trade Federation the right to attack civilian and non-military targets," said Amidala. "Beware, Viceroy. Your credits will not save you this time. If you have not come before me to surrender, then you and your fleet will be destroyed. I suggest that you either do so or leave this system while you still can."
"This time we will not be leaving, Your Highness,"
Gunray said, with a smug, self-satisfied air that Padme didn't like at all.
"It is you and your rebel friends who must surrender or be destroyed. Your little insurrection is at an end, Queen Amidala."
"Bold words from a being who once spent 12 months in my dungeons," Amidala said. "Am I meant to be impressed? You will not triumph here, Viceroy."
"I have a treaty for you to sign, Queen Amidala. The treaty you would have been wise to sign 13 years ago and prevented this pointless conflict, though with a few additions."
"I will sign no treaty," Amidala said. "Not now, not ever. I will not cooperate with whatever scheme you have manufactured this time, Viceroy. The Trade Federation is not welcome in the Naboo system or in the Confederacy of Independent Systems. You will leave now or be destroyed." Cruel satisfaction danced across Newt Gunray's features.
"I thought you might say that, Your Highness," he said.
He gestured imperiously at someone out of the holoprojector's pickup range.
"Bring in our guest."
Amidala had a good Sabacc face, a better one than Padme did, because the only sign of emotion that she showed was a slight widening of her eyes, while Padme couldn't stop herself from gasping. One of the other handmaidens, Rabe, she thought, swore viciously. Two Magna Guards dragged Obi-Wan Kenobi into view beside Newt Gunray, shoving him down to his knees. He was wearing the uniform of a Naboo starfighter pilot, now torn and charred in places. His face was bruised, blood dried along his hairline and down the side of his face, clotted in the 2 days' worth of stubble on his jaw. As if the binders on his wrists weren't enough,
He had a slave collar locked around his neck, the skin rubbed raw beneath it. He raised his head to stare at the vidscreen, dismay briefly flashing across his still handsome features.
"Your Majesty, I am so sorry," he said.
Hamadala's hands were white-knuckled on the arms of her throne. "You have gone too far this time, Viceroy." Nemordian features weren't good at conveying emotion, or at least doing so in a manner that humans could easily understand. But Padme thought that Newt Gunray smirked.
"We also have Bail Organa of Alderaan in custody," he said. "A friend of yours, I believe?"
"I should have put a blaster bolt in your head 13 years ago when I had the chance," Amidala said, conversationally.
"You will sign my treaty, Your Highness,"
Gunray said, ignoring the threat.
"I will have Naboo, or your lover will die."
At his gesture, one of the Magna Guards jabbed Kenobi with its electrostaff, making him convulse in pain, though he didn't cry out. Amidala jerked forward, one hand starting to raise before she forced it back down. "The Confederacy of Independent Systems does not negotiate with terrorists," she said, her voice like ice, and substantially calmer under the circumstances than Padme had ever managed on the few occasions when Anakin had been tortured in front of her. "You will release Captain Kenobi, or you will die."
"No, Your Highness, he will die."
Gunray raised one hand, as a battle droid stepped forward, its blaster leveled at Kenobi's head.
"I have been waiting for this day a long time."
"I will not be intimidated by your empty threats, Viceroy."
"Padme,"
Kenobi said, his voice breathy with pain, but pitched to carry. Gunray blinked at him in surprise, a thin film forming over his red eyes and then vanishing.
"Yes,"
he said.
"Talk sense into your woman."
Kenobi ignored him. His gaze was fixed on Amidala, with a very familiar look in his blue eyes.
"Don't do it,"
he said. Furious, Gunray jabbed at the control on his wrist. Amidala cried out once, distressed, as the slave collar lit up, electricity crackling along Kenobi's body as he screamed. "Viceroy Gunray," Amidala said, after Gunray had released the control. Her hands were clenched into fists on the arms of her throne. "I swear on the tombs of my ancestors and the head of my unborn child that if you harm him, I will burn your homeworld and its colonies to ash. By the time my fleet and my armies have finished off your purse worlds, there will be not so much as a Nemordian flea anywhere in this galaxy. And I will not sign your treaty."
"Then Kenobi will die,"
Gunray said.
"And my bombardment of your planet will continue until you come to your senses, Your Highness."
"If my planet burns," Amidala said, "so does yours." Padme winced at the echo, even though there wasn't any way Amidala could have realized it. "And we will burn together," Palpatine had laughed. His last words as Anakin screamed and the Senate building came crashing down around, Republic clone troopers storming the Jedi Temple and Separatist battle droids turning on their commanders. "If I cannot have Empire, then I will have chaos." "Is it always going to end in fire?" Padme found herself wondering, her own hands closed into fists. Kenobi wasn't Obi-Wan, but he looked like Obi-Wan, and he sounded like Obi-Wan, and it was almost too much to bear. She could recognize Amidala's agony, well hidden as it was,
because it was too close to hers when Anakin's life was on the line. Kenobi was breathing hard, unwilling tears cutting tracks through the dried blood on his face. But he raised his head, letting it snug more securely against the blaster the battle droid was holding. Amidala's breath caught in her throat, a small sound nearly lost in the big room.
"I love you, Padme,"
Kenobi said. Padme flinched at the sound of her name, glancing sideways at Amidala. The queen was clutching at the arms of her throne, staring at the vidscreen as though hoping to light Newt Gunray on fire with the sheer force of her rage. Padme could see Obi-Wan's name on her lips. "I will not negotiate with terrorists," she repeated. Gunray opened his mouth to speak, probably to give the kill order, but then there was a burst of unintelligible sound just barely in range of the holoprojector's audio pickup, and he looked away.
"What is it? What did you say?"
In his moment of distraction, Kenobi moved with the blinding, blurring speed of a trained Jedi Knight. Padme didn't see what he did, but suddenly he was on his feet, and the battle droid was spinning in one direction, its blaster in the other, as Kenobi snatched at thin air with his cuffed hands. The slave collar snapped cleanly in two. Kenobi still moving as he leaned back to avoid a Magna Guard strike, seizing the electrostaff from its hands and flinging the droid back over his head. The view shuddered as it hit the vidscreen, but held. Newt Gunray shrieked in incoherent rage. He took a step backwards, nearly tripping over the fallen battle droid as Kenobi flared the fingers of one hand and made a yanking motion. The second Magna Guard collapsed like a puppet with its strings cut. The first was still attempting to regain its footing when Kenobi slammed the end of his electrostaff into its chest cavity, holding the droid down as it twisted in writhing agony, then went still as its circuits overloaded. Kenobi spun towards Gunray, the ends of the electrostaff crackling as the Viceroy shouted for his bodyguards in frustrated rage. Padme saw Amidala close her eyes for an instant, her breath going out in sheer relief. Then she straightened her back and said coldly, "Now, Viceroy, we will sign a new treaty."
"No one will be signing any treaty."
At the sight of Mace Windu, all the color drained from Kenobi's face. He shifted his position, his grip easy on the electrostaff, but his gaze flickered around him, taking in the other Jedi that had arrived on the warship's bridge along with Windu. Windu raised his blazing lightsaber.
"Obi-Wan Kenobi, you are under arrest for crimes against the Galactic Republic, including high treason, crimes against peace, and murder."
"He is not a citizen of the Galactic Republic," Amidala spat, leaning forward as though she could reach into the vidscreen and snatch Kenobi out of it. "The Jedi have no jurisdiction in this star system."
"It is a convention of the civilized galaxy that the Jedi Order has jurisdiction over all Jedi, past and present, and all other Force users,"
Shakti told her solemnly. Windu wasn't done.
"Newt Gunray, you are under arrest."
"Me?" said the Viceroy, radiant in astonishment.
"For crimes against the Galactic Republic, including war crimes and crimes against civilization. Queen Amidala, I assure you this attack was not authorized by the Galactic Senate or the Supreme Chancellor. We do not wage war on civilians. The Trade Federation is not acting as an extension of the military forces of the Galactic Republic in this instance, and they will pay the price for this crime."
"Where have we heard that before?" Irte murmured.
"You have no right!"
Gunray wailed.
"I have assurances that the Senate will side with us."
"Master Windu," Amidala's voice cracked like a whip, "you have no jurisdiction and no legal right to be in this star system. Or are you not aware that a state of war exists between our two sovereign states?
The presence of Republic troops in this system is an act of aggression that will be met with equal force. You will release Captain Kenobi, because the Jedi Order has no authority in the Confederacy of Independent Systems, of which this system is a member. You will turn over Viceroy Gunray to stand trial in the Confederacy for his crimes.
This warship is now under the control of the Republic military,
said a Jedi Knight that Padme didn't recognize.
As such, it is Sovereign Republic territory. We have every right to arrest the traitor Kenobi and the criminal Gunray.
Kenobi's gaze went towards Amidala. He looked, Padme realized, with dawning horror. Afraid. She had never seen Obi-Wan afraid before.
Padme, I'm so sorry,
he said.
I...
The transmission winked out before he could finish. Obi-Wan! Amidala jerked in her throne as though she had been shot, her eyes wide with horror. Contact the fleet, she ordered. Tell them to intercept and board. Rabe, the handmaid nearest the door to the conference room, was already running for it, but she was still reaching for the controls when it slid open and an officer put her head inside. Your Majesty, the Republic flotilla has jumped to hyperspace, along with the Trade Federation flagship. The remainder of the Federation warships are disengaging from combat and jumping to hyperspace. Amidala swallowed. Can the home fleet pursue? No, Your Majesty. The officer gave her a worried look. Then Rabe murmured something, and she stepped back, letting the door slide closed between them. Amidala was still gripping the arms of her throne, hanging on as if for dear life. She was staring directly ahead at the place the virtual vidscreen had hung, her gaze blank. Sabe leaned over her, putting a hand on her shoulder and whispering in her ear. At last, Amidala began to pry her hands free of their iron grip on the throne, one finger at a time, then flattened them against her stomach, her nails scarlet against the gold embroidery of her gown. Beneath her white face paint, her face had gone sepulchral, skull-like with horror, and a tear rolled slowly down her cheek, tracing a path beside the red line of the painted one. "The Jedi have my husband," she breathed.